Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of the What Next podcast with myself, Josephine Saruk. I have with me today a very amazing lady called Amanda Yeme. She is a clinical psychologist and she's been practicing for over 6 years here in Nigeria. Amanda, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Amanda, I've had quite a number of inquiries come through What Next from various social media handles requesting that we ask or discuss the topic of mental health, right? Okay. And a lot of the people sending this message I found generally are within the age range of 22 to 35. So I'm not sure if it's something that is quite a focus for this particular age group or if they're just the most vocal about it. But I have had a couple of questions coming in to ask questions around how do I balance my life at the moment. I've got so much happening and I feel that my mental health is taking a hit. And I just wanted to, you know, to hear from you because you've been practicing in Nigeria for over 6 years. Have you seen an increase in people coming to you to discuss these sorts of issues around anxiety, depression, these sort of issues? Are they on the rise?
Yes, I'd say if I compared the way people used to respond to therapy or even speak about it in 2017, which is when I started, to where it is now in 2023, people are more vocal. People are seeking help more. People are reaching out more. People are referring other people to come in for therapy. They're giving their friends gifts as therapy sessions as gifts for Christmas, for their birthdays. And they're even bringing their parents to therapy. They're bringing their kids to therapy. So now there is more awareness that's going on about the importance of mental health care. There's more awareness going around about how your mental health can affect your ability to even make good decisions for yourself and your overall quality of life, which is a really good thing over time. So yeah, I have seen an increase. And I know that as years go by, with how tough things are getting, people are going to reach out more for more care because they need a place where they can go to talk about emotional issues that's not focused on how much money are you making or how well do you look, but how happy are you? Are you genuinely satisfied with your life? Are you feeling fulfilled? Like things that make life worth living. So they're looking for a place where they can go and get very objective ideas and understanding of the way their mind works and how their environment also even influences that.
How their environment influences that. So there've been a couple of debates going on as well on social media around, is there a generation that is just taking this mental health discussion a little too seriously? Couple of years or let's say couple of decades ago, mm-hmm. It wasn't such a factor. Mm-hmm. I mean, it might have been, but people were not discussing it as much. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering, do you think that 2020 played a huge role, COVID? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, as I would say to some people, I think young people have a lot more to contend with now, mm-hmm. than probably I did growing up because the internet was not what it is today. Right now, you have so much access to information.
Yeah.
You have so much access to what people are doing. And it's always glamorizing the lives of all these content creators and social media influencers. And I guess it's putting a lot more pressure on people to be successful, to achieve. And maybe these were pressures that growing up, I didn't necessarily feel, mm-hmm. because I was on my own path and it was based on what I felt was an area I wanted to focus on and not necessarily influenced by, in fact, we didn't have influencers, mm-hmm. not to the best of my knowledge. When I was growing up, influencer is a word that just over the last 10, 15 years has, mm-hmm. become a major thing. Mm-hmm. So do you think the internet plays a huge role in how people's mental health's been impacted and COVID as well? Because I definitely think that COVID, like we can all agree that COVID
had a huge,
had a huge impact. Yes.
I think all of the questions, yes. Those, everything is true. Like you, it's not a one path. Like there's just one answer to it. So is there a generation that's taking the conversation of mental illness and mental wellness a lot more seriously compared to other generations? Yes. Does the internet play a role? They have access to more information. They have access to more people's lives, watching the glamorized lives of wellness people and people who are content creators and influencers and comparing it to yours. Does it affect you? Yes. Did 2020 take a huge hit on people's minds? Yes. So everything, yes. Now, how have these things had an impact? So with the generation, the current generation that's in trend now is Gen Z, they have more access to more knowledge. It is during their generation that the conversation about mental wellness and mental health became much more prominent. People started to talk about it more. People started to talk about their mind, their health, about suicide, about depression, about anxiety. So that played a role. In previous generations, nobody was having those conversations. And even if they were, they didn't have a name to it, or it was in a very, you know, hush-hush way, because it was an embarrassing thing to talk about, to say, oh, my child is going to a psychiatrist or going to see a therapist. It was even more of psychiatrist than a therapist, because yeah. with psychiatrists, then you have to take medication. So it means you're taking medication for your mind. So your mind is not okay. So there was a lot more stigma, a lot more shame around having a conversation about mental health. But from 2015 upwards, even in Nigeria, I was starting to notice that more and more people were willing to talk about, oh, I'm depressed, or I'm anxious, I need medication to manage my the symptoms of my mental illness. I'm struggling with neurodevelopmental disorders like autism and ADHD. People became more vocal. And as time went on, that kept happening. Then when 2020 came along, there was not a greater focus because we were seeing the effects that it was having on the minds of the people who had to stay at home. People were struggling with fatigue. The people were getting depressed. People were dealing with grief. And grief, not even just losing loved ones, but the loss of a lifestyle. So things that they would normally do before, they were no longer doing it, and now they had to contend with change that was very abrupt, very sudden, and at a global scale. So the effects of that was being noticed by, you know, the people you work with, your family members, things that you could even go out of your house to avoid. You no longer had that access anymore, so you were at home all the time. So the things you'd run away from, you had to then contend with it. So
as you had to face yourself, yeah, basically,
exactly,
which a lot of people had not spent a lot of time
doing.
Yeah,
exactly. So thankfully, at the same time, whilst the conversation of, you know, wash your hands, protect yourself physically was going on, there was also a conversation about how do you take care of your mental health? How do you deal with the anxiety? So lots of people were now coming into therapy. And then the third part was social media. We didn't have, like in my generation, the only influencers I knew of was Disney TV. It was your Decoder, DSTV. So those were the only people I had to contend with or even think of or imagine, like, ah, there could be a life that was greater and much more shinier than the one I had here in Nigeria. I didn't have a lot of influences like I did with such quick access like you'd have these days on your phone. You had to turn on the TV, and to turn on the TV, you had to have light. And your parents had to even give you permission for that. And we didn't even have a lot of magazines that were focused on young children, teenagers, that talked about our bodies or the way we looked or fashion. Here in Nigeria, we had just our textbooks. We had to go to school. So there wasn't a lot of pressure from the internet that shaped the way we were. We were comparing ourselves with each other or even the standard our parents had set for us. So our minds were not so troubled. So that didn't mean that we didn't have our own version of, you know, the issues that the current generation is having. Even if we didn't have the internet, we had something else to contend with, and that was our parents. So we're still, so many of us millennials are still living through the trauma.
And the expectations from parents. This is the path you need to. You need to be a doctor. You need to be an accountant. You just, you know, having those ambitions that were already created for us. Mm-hmm. And so being vocal enough to say, this is the path. I mean, that was what I think a lot of people were struggling with. You know, I know for me, even selecting the course I was going to take at university was a negotiation. Mm-hmm. Luckily, my parents are very open-minded and supportive, but you still had to have that negotiation with them to say, this is what I want to do. And they're like, okay, maybe you want to consider this for these reasons and whatnot. Yeah. So definitely agree with you. But let me ask you a quick question. What would you say to the generation that looks at Gen Zs and say, suck it up? Toughen up. I mean, we also had to go through a lot of things and we just dealt with it. We didn't know about anxiety or it wasn't a factor for us, because even if you were anxious, you kind of just rolled with it. And the fact that you guys are labeling these terms now, the way you're feeling and so in touch with your emotion and trying to identify and give titles to how you're feeling may be part of the problem. And the concern that young people are now no longer having the tools that are necessary to be able to self-deal with challenges as they come along, because life will always throw challenges at you. And their concern is, with young people being permitted to constantly keep talking about their emotions and using mental, well, okay, so they see mental health in some cases as an excuse that young people are using not to face the challenges that do exist. In life, you're going to have challenges. Mm-hmm. So the question is, what do we say to these adults that don't understand it? And to the young people, how do we help them get the tools? Because, I mean, it's a balance, right?
Yes.
You don't also want someone to feel, I've been diagnosed with anxiety, so there's nothing I can do. This is just who I am. And so please, I'm stressed. I can't work the hours you need me to work because I've been diagnosed to have anxiety. And so I need special care or I need some sort of special treatment.
Yeah, I was going to answer to what you just said. I was going to say balance, because both parties are in some ways have like extremes, and at the same time, they're also right. For the generation now that's more vocal about their mental health, they have to be. It's important. There are people struggling with anxiety disorders. There are people that are struggling with clinical depression. There are people struggling with neurodevelopmental disorders. It's important to talk about it. It's important to know it. It's important to understand it. And it's also important to label it sometimes when it's necessary, because the labeling then helps with the path to healing. If you don't know what you're treating, then you can't really treat it. So there are people and there are situations where the understanding and the labeling of the state of mind of a person is necessary for them to get help. Then there's the part where resilience is an important skill to have, even when you're recovering from mental illnesses. The ability to pick yourself back up, the ability to take yourself up and do the things you need to do, to push through difficult things like fear and shame and a desire to just lay back and the lack of motivation, that will to put yourself in a place where you're taking active care of yourself in spite of the fact that things may not be working out the way you want them to. Being able to take control, accountability, and responsibility for yourself, those parts also exist. So it's a thing of balance. So as the younger generation is educating the older generation about the awareness of mental illnesses and how they need to know, like, okay, some of the things that they experienced during their lives, maybe they were not mentally healthy or they just don't have enough mental health support or emotional support to deal with it. It's the same way the older generation also has to help the younger generation understand that, yes, we didn't know what these things were, but there were skills that, even though they were not identifiable as, oh, this is a tool for coping with anxiety, we still utilize them to be able to get through those difficult parts of our lives. And they are still worth using now, even if now you're going to label it as this particular method of treating anxiety. So it's for both generations to share with each other the knowledge that they have gained, because they're both beneficial, rather than seeing it as a thing of, you guys are not labeling your illnesses well, you're not aware. And the other ones are like, you guys are not being very resilient and strong. If everyone is attacking the other generation based on what they don't know, then we're not going to make any progress.
What we have is
just information to share with each other and then balance it out, because they're necessary for both parties.
So is anxiety, right, actually a mental illness? Because I mean, we're all going to have some point in our lives where we're anxious about something. So you know, having being labeled or being told, oh, you're diagnosed with anxiety, I think for me, that's the concern. I can understand the next thing I'm going to ask you is, what are the most common form of mental illness that you're seeing in your clinic at the moment?
Okay, so is anxiety a mental illness? No, anxiety is not a mental illness. Anxiety is a normal human reaction to stress. Mm-hmm. Everybody feels anxiety. So then it becomes a disorder when it affects your ability to function in your daily life.
Right.
So when you're not able to leave your house, you're not able to go to school, go to work, accomplish tasks, keep in touch with people, socialize, you're not able to separate yourself. That's why we have different types of anxiety disorders. So when a person comes in and you're going to get diagnosed, what I'd look out for is, do you have high levels of anxiety that impair your ability to function well or to execute certain tasks? Or do you have an anxiety disorder? Because there are people who have very high levels of anxiety and they just need to learn how to manage it better. Okay, you know, when you're in this situation, breathe, talk to yourself positively, try the grounding technique. These are things that you can use to manage those heavy feelings of anxiety in the moment. And by doing that, they're better able to then navigate their day-to-day life. So they can have the presentations they want to have. They can walk through anywhere they want to walk. So they can go through their day without having crippling fear. But then we have people that have generalized anxiety disorder, panic attack, panic disorders, separation anxiety, or even phobias or agoraphobia. Those are much more severe cases of anxiety that impairs their ability to even leave their house.
Right.
Or they're constantly in a state of worry that you tend to find that people that have GAD, that's generalized anxiety disorder, would then have like comorbid with it physical symptoms like high blood pressure. So people that are constantly worrying, and they worry so much that it makes it difficult for them to even do the things that they're meant to do. Or with separation anxiety, when you leave somebody, you start to have nightmares, you have trouble with sleeping, you're having a constant heart palpitations because you can't stop yourself or control the negative thoughts or imaginations that the person you've separated from, something bad is going to happen to them. So is anxiety a mental illness? No.
Is it something bad is going to happen to them, or I can't function without them?
Something, the fear that something bad is going to happen to them. That's what separation. So right. People, everyone has anxiety.
It's not someone who's been in a relationship, they've broken up, and mm-hmm. all of a sudden, you know, you can't function, you don't want to do anything, you're so...
Oh no, that's grief.
That's grief.
Yeah,
right?
That's just grief, yes.
Okay,
yes,
all right. So. It's good to know the difference, you know,
you see,
for our listeners.
These are the
out
situations
there.
Yeah. Where the labeling helps to understand what's going on. But
yeah.
If you just label and then stop with the label and say, oh, because I have this label of this thing, I'm going to stick with it, and you don't take steps to help yourself manage it better, that's right. When it then becomes a problem, because now you know what's wrong with you, but you're not doing anything about it.
So yes. Are there early signs that you can pick on or you should be aware of? Mm-hmm. Are there early signs of there might be something wrong, or I am... my anxiety is now, you know, becoming an all-time high, and it's mm-hmm. no longer in the realm of normal,
yeah.
you know, such as I'm not sleeping, I've got
yes.
constant insomnia,
yes.
I'm getting headaches maybe.
Yes. Body pains,
exactly. Yes. I can no longer think clearly.
Yes.
You know, I'm restless all the time. Those are early signs.
Yes,
so what can I do once I start to identify this?
Well, for some people, you can just go straight into therapy and have a professional talk to you about it. So you have a proper assessment done to know, okay, is this just...
Even in those early stages?
Yeah, even in those early stages.
There's nothing I could do at home myself, such as, you know, I don't know, go for walks,
clear my
head.
Yes.
Maybe take a holiday and step away from whatever it is that's giving me this level mm-hmm. of stress and anxiety. No?
Yeah. No, there are things. There are things that you can do. I'd mention those later. But what I'd say is, like, if you can get professional help, someone to help you understand the things that are going on, because some people know that they're anxious and they deal with the symptoms of anxiety, but it doesn't help them at the core of it, because there might be some other things that are sort of triggering those feelings that they're not aware of, something even deeper than they themselves are conscious about. So,
right.
You know, you can speak to a therapist to help you explore your feelings a lot better, to know why you feel very anxious. And then you can do things on your own at home, which is something you'll do even if you were seeing a therapist. You have to have your own maintenance culture as an individual. So
right.
Things like when you say go outside and touch grass. So you go outside barefoot, put your feet to the floor. You can activate all of your five senses. What are you seeing? What are you hearing? What are you smelling? What are you tasting? What are you touching? Just to make sure that you're present. So that's mindfulness, being present in the moment. You can take things like chamomile tea. It's very helpful. It can calm you down. Exercise is also a really, really good way of getting down your anxiety levels.
Going on a walk. I can attest to that.
Yes. Going to the gym, even going on a long walk. Listening to good music has the ability to change your mood and also change the way you're feeling. Talking to a friend, even speaking to yourself, like, okay, asking yourself the question of what is making me anxious right now? What am I afraid of? What is making me upset? What is making me stressed? And answering that question can help to alleviate some of those feelings. And journaling. So you can either journal by recording on your phone, or you can write it out on a sheet of paper. But the thing about anxiety is, once you're able to tell yourself what the feelings are, it actually helps you reduce the symptoms a bit more, because when you're not thinking with anxiety, it's like this, what you call like a snowballing,
yeah.
something a little small, and then it just keeps getting better, bigger.
Yeah, skyrocket.
And anxiety makes things that are very little seem far much more bigger than they are. But when you get down to the root of it, you find that it's just something really little that you probably have overthought, or you've not given yourself enough time to address, and you keep like suppressing it, and now it's manifesting with those symptoms.
And I guess for me, that is why it's so important that we start to teach this skills
mm-hmm.
to people at a very young age. Because if
yeah.
you think about it, as you're becoming a teenager,
mm-hmm.
that's when your hormones are raging the most, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's when every little thing seems like bigger than life itself. So learning these skills very young will also help you become a more emotionally balanced adult, right?
Yes.
So I do think it's very important that these conversations are out there, and parents especially understand it as well, so that they're able to identify some of these traits in their kids when it comes up. And I think another thing you mentioned that I quite like are the triggers, right? Being able to identify what are your triggers. And a lot of people I find are not even aware that they have certain triggers. And maybe that's where therapy comes in handy, because you can then go back to try and figure out, was there a trauma that led to this trigger? Or is there something you've seen, something that over time has sort of become a part of you and you're not even aware of it? So definitely, I do like that. But then there's also the question of affordability. Mm-hmm. Maybe some people don't go to therapy because they're already concerned about, listen, the cost of living at the moment is... you know, you could argue it's at a record high, right? Inflation at the moment in Nigeria, I think it's about 21.5%. Mm-hmm. So, you know, adding, you know, therapy to already your daily essentials might to some people in itself seem daunting. Mm-hmm. I love the idea that you said people are gifting therapy sessions to friends and family. And I think that's pretty amazing. This is the first time I've heard that. So definitely I will start to encourage that within my community for people to gift therapy sessions to people. But would you say it's affordable?
In this economy, yes, therapy is affordable. I know it's hard to hear because when you look at the prices, you're like, oh my God, that's a lot of money, but it is competitively affordable. If I had to break down what it takes to run a practice, you'd see that the amount of money we charge is sometimes it's just enough for us to break even as therapists in this country. So it's an affordable price, but not everyone can afford it. So, but then there are other things that you can do. There are NGOs I know that offer free therapy sessions. Okay. They offer free counseling sessions to people. I know that you can have conversations with the therapist you want to work with to know if they can offer you a discount on their prices. Some colleagues of mine offer like cheaper prices to people who are of a certain working class. Like in my practice, we have like a package for students. So instead of you paying how much you'd pay for three sessions, you pay far less and that is subsidized for you. If you're a professional artist, it's also subsidized for you as well. Sometimes we offer discounts to people. We offer cheaper services like consultation sessions that you can get. We try to do lectures for people on our Instagram pages, or we even do like private lectures where you can just pay like 2,000 naira or 5,000 naira to come and educate yourself. We share helpful tips on Instagram. So if you follow some of these wellness pages as well, you can get tips on how to manage certain parts of your life and you can put that into practice as well. And then whenever we have like conferences or mental health events, you can always visit, because I recently went to a mental health conference that was organized by Dr. Mimuna, I think about 2 weeks ago, and they were offering free therapy sessions there. So as much as you can, if you can't pay for therapy straight away, you can always, you know, realign your finances in a way that you make it a priority. Mm-hmm. And then also you can take advantages of some of the free and discounted services that different practices offer. And you can also have a conversation with your therapist and, you know, let them know, like, I'm from this tax bracket, this economic level. I really want to get therapy. What options do you have for people like me who cannot afford therapy? And even speaking to your company, I know there are businesses that offer free therapy to their staff. They pay therapists to come in.
Oh, yeah.
And yes.
Quite a lot of corporate organizations are investing in that now.
Exactly. Yeah. And check your HMO. Your HMO, you might qualify for psychiatric care or therapy as well. So if going directly to private practice is not affordable for you, there are other avenues that you can always inquire about and ways that you can even go on YouTube. YouTube is a great resource. If you're struggling with something, how can I deal with? How can I cope with? How can I handle with? It's a good resource for you to be able to get all the information that you need. So, yeah.
Okay, that's brilliant. And what is your Instagram handle just for the community in case they do want to try and reach out to you or get more information on some of this free tips that you put up?
So the Instagram handle for the practice is at ndidi. That's n.d.i.d.i. N-D-I-D-I, ndidi.
Great.
Yeah.
So in your clinic, what would you say are the cases that you seem to be seeing quite a lot of at the moment? What sort of mental health challenges are you seeing on the rise?
On the rise. it changes over time, honestly. There are some months where you have a particular, you know, group of people coming for this particular issue, and then another month you have this particular rise in this. For this quarter, I've seen a lot of low self-esteem.
Mm.
Yeah, people are struggling with their self-esteem. They don't feel good about themselves. They're not very happy with who they are. They want to become more self-loving and more self-aware. I've had a bit of, you know, people struggling in unhealthy relationships, trying mm-hmm. to navigate leaving unhealthy relationships that are not good for them. And, you know, in that same breath, also dealing with like self-esteem as well. We've had people struggling with porn addiction also coming in for therapy. We've had men coming into therapy to try to learn how to navigate masculinity and their
manhood.
Really? Yeah. Like they want to, you know, have a better idea, make better friends.
Mm.
Have better relationships with the women in their lives, both the romantic and the platonic as well. And that's been the most interesting one, just trying to help men take care of themselves. It's really nice. So we've had a bit of that coming in. And then as usual, anxiety. When I started out in 2017, there was a lot of depression.
Mm.
By 2020, there was a lot of trauma. And now there's a lot of anxiety. So as the times change, the cases change. So anxiety is like number one. People are very anxious to go outside, anxious about the future, just anxious. And they're worrying a lot about things that are not within their control.
It's interesting that you mentioned men. Are you finding that there's a particular gender that tends to come in for therapy more? Is there an even balance?
No, the women come in for therapy more than men do.
Okay.
Yes, but the men do come for therapy.
Okay.
Yeah. So some women pay for men to come for therapy. Some men pay for their friends to come for therapy, and some men come for therapy on their own. So yeah, I'm seeing they're coming.
Okay. Well, it's good to know that the stigma around therapy is sort of dying out, and
yes,
people are taking it a bit more serious.
Yes.
Because I think mental health is definitely a topic that's very important. And mm-hmm. especially now, like I said, with so much access to information
mm-hmm.
and people just, I even think this election period, a lot of people's mental
yes.
health took a toll
yes.
in itself. And, you know, I was saying to a couple of people within my community that get off Twitter,
mm-hmm.
you know, completely stay mm-hmm. off Twitter, because, you know, just reading through some of those contents alone is enough to take an emotional hit. And then obviously it spirals from there. So
yeah, I remember after the election period, I was observing it from the news and through conversations with people in my real life.
Mm.
When it came to social media engagement about the election, I did not do it. I'm not on Twitter anyway, so
mm.
I did not do any of that.
Yeah.
And I realized like the way I felt about the election compared to the way people who had been on social media felt about the election was different. They were more anxious, angry,
mm.
frustrated, you know. And I was there, I was like, okay, I know like stuff's popping, but like, there is something that I can control. There's something I can
absolutely
do. Like the reality and the virtual life is not always the same thing all the time. And
yeah.
virtual life is you're getting a concentration of a particular kind of information. So if that's all you're hearing, you're going to think that that's what's happening in real life.
And it's becoming very addictive,
yes.
if you ask me.
Yeah.
I think prior to 2020, I was never really big on social media.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously coming into 2020 and you can't step out of the house, you can't, you know, engage physically with your peers.
Mm-hmm.
So you are plugged in a bit more. And I found that, you know, for work as well, you're plugged in. For socializing, you're plugged in. For even just checking in on loved ones and friends,
mm-hmm.
you're plugged in. So we were consistently plugged in. And I've intentionally, since 2021, chosen to have, you know, periods of the day where I'm not touching my device. I don't want to be plugged in. I need to step away from it because it just doesn't stop, you know,
mm-hmm.
and you're constantly being fed with information, whether it's work related or it's just social information, or it's just, as I call some of the content coming through, garbage and misinformation. So I think it is very important because it's definitely helped me.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely helped me to be able to step away from it, because at some point I was having insomnia as well, and just, you know, constantly I felt constantly agitated, right? So, and I realized that, listen, I really need to be intentional about stepping away from this. And of course, for me two big things that I do. I go for long walks. They help so much. Mm-hmm. And I journal. So mm-hmm. I've always been someone that's journaled since I was young. And I definitely believe in that whole concept of once you write it down and then you are able to express your emotions and let it out, then it's like a transfer of energy, yes. right? And I'm such a big believer of transfer of energy. So how do I, you know, transfer that negative energy into something else? And yeah. it's always better to write it down. And it's also important that once you find that, listen, when I'm always around a certain person, I'm agitated or I'm left feeling low, mm-hmm. then you also need to try and make sure that you identify that and you start to limit your interaction with such people yeah. because that is what you can control. You can't control them, yes. but you can definitely control how much access they have to you. And therefore, because there's some people that just transfer their own negative energy. Mm-hmm. You know, you've ever had those days where you're yeah. feeling great about yourself and then you come across a friend who's completely low mm-hmm. and then you walk away and the friend's feeling better. And yeah, you're now, feeling low. You're yes. feeling low, right? Yes. So, I mean, those things too happen. But yeah, for me, it's all about being intentional about your own personal well-being. Mm-hmm. And if therapy is what you need, then absolutely, yeah. you know, I recommend people going for therapy.
Yeah.
So just final word from you before we wrap up. Okay. What would you like to say to people as it pertains to their mental health? Or just general wellness?
What would I say? Eat healthy, 7 to 9 hours of sleep, get a good social support system, be vulnerable, talk to people that care about you, journal, exercise, and have a spiritual belief, something that grounds you in your faith and in your reality as well. If you do that consistently and you have a routine, you do well. Those are like basics that you need to be able to get through life. Healthy communication, very important. Not angry, aggressive, passive-aggressive communication. Open, honest communication. It would help you so much and it would alleviate a lot of your problems even before you get into therapy. So yeah.
Thank you very much, Amanda. Well, there you have it, guys. You've heard it from Amanda, clinical psychologist, with a wealth of experience. Thank you very much for that. And guys, please share with your friends, your loved ones. This contents from today's conversation might come in handy, even for people who don't even know they realize or realize that they need it. So share, like, comment, and please continue to send your DMs because you shape the topics that I will continue to speak on. Thank you very much. Have a blessed week.